Good evening and welcome to the Mind Behind Leadership live here on talkradio.nyc, live in New York. My name is Graham Dobbin, and every week we pick up aspects of leadership that matter, you know, issues that need to be dealt with that we work with on a daily basis. Recently, we've had best-selling authors Don Lyons and Sam Leibovitz on, and you can catch them again on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all the usual podcast platforms. And coming up, we've got Elliot Ishmeladou from MarketWatch TV, which is part of the Wall Street Journal, and six times Emmy Award winner Dr. Sean Duperron. Also, keep a listen out for a very special show to mark International Women's Day in March. I'm really looking forward to that one. We're going to take leadership from a completely different angle. Tonight, we're going to talk about connections and leadership development. Tonight's guest is Kimberly Lane, and Kimberly is the owner and principal of consultancy firm KCC. She advises and coaches leaders at all levels on how to become conscious and connected. Kimberly says that the soft stuff that makes the hard stuff work. So we're going to dig in and explore that a little bit and kind of understand what the approach is there. She's a professional speaker and educates through keynotes and workshops, and is also a host of The Power of Connection in Biz Show on YouTube. Now, as always, we don't get to this point without having some experience, and Kimberly's got over 20 years experience as a top business development executive with Fortune 100 companies. She's a best-selling author with the book Connecting Changes Everything. She's an international certified coach for ICF. She's a Myers-Briggs certified consultant, a Green Belt Lean Six Sigma, and she's also in Cambridge Who's Who's. Which is not doing any of that, which I don't know how she's got time for anything else. She does eat, which is good, drinks wine, likes tennis, cheesecake, and a Shih Tzu Sammy. Welcome to the show, Kimberly.
In the background there, sorry about that.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got two for a one this evening. Good to see you, Kimberly. Thanks for coming on. You know, to kick us off, really, just give us a little bit of background. How did you get to where you are? Tell us what you do, what you enjoy.
You know, it's never a straight path. It's always a circuitous path. And I think sometimes the universe just provides opportunities, and it's really about taking advantage of opportunities. You know, you mentioned my 20 years plus of experience as an executive working for Fortune 100 companies. And my last executive position, I was working with a startup company, I will not name the company, and was hired to build out their health care vertical, specifically in the customer service gig economy space, i.e. working, using individuals that are working from home and offering customer service for healthcare entities, whether they were such like Blue Cross Blue Shield or hospital systems or Cigna. But, you know, it was before, you know, obviously Uber was out and Lyft, but it was not a very acceptable gig economy in the healthcare space. And anybody that knows healthcare, it's a very conservative industry, risk averse, et cetera. So that particular company I was working with got bought, and then they decided they didn't want to stay in the healthcare space. So they let me go. So that was about the time I just was burnt out on travel, things that typically happen for all those of us that have been working in corporate America and been successful. Just was tired of the rat race. And so I decided I'm going to do something on my own. And that kind of led to me writing the book called Connections Change Everything, which is right behind me here, conveniently. And to look at, actually having had poor leaders in my past experience and knowing how difficult that is to create a positive work environment and to achieve, I decided to focus on leaders to improve that environment through coaching as well. So, and then just always loving to be on stage and loving to share a message and really feeling that if I can get to leaders who then can to adopt this consciously connected leadership, we can impact more people subsequently, right? And in number wise versus me just working with one individual at a time. So hence the speaking piece of it. So does that answer your question?
It does. I'm curious, what does poor leadership look like? It's really interesting. On this show, we talk regularly about good leadership. I'm curious about what your thoughts are on what poor leadership looks like.
Yeah. So, you know, I just remember I was in a sales position at one time, and my sales leader would, every week we would have a team meeting, right? That would talk about what are you selling? What did you close? What are you going to sell next week? Who did you talk to? What's your pipeline, right? And that was a team meeting. And then supposedly we would have one-on-ones at least once a week or at least twice a month in order to talk about personal goals, business goals, how are things going? How can I help you? Well, those personal meetings inevitably always got canceled. And then periodically the weekly calls of the team would get canceled because he had something better to do, board meeting or whatever. And the team itself felt very disconnected, such to the fact that I took it on my initiative to get the team together on a regular basis to talk about what was going on, to help support each other, and to help drive our business. So absent of our manager. So, you know, I think especially now living in this virtual environment, we cannot let go of the need to communicate and connect with our people in a relationship perspective. Your job as a leader is to be in a relationship with your people. And if you feel like your only position is to really lead to a target, i.e. a sales quota, a revenue number, a project deadline, you're missing the boat. Your team is supposed, you're supposed to be leading your team through the relationships you've built with them, the soft stuff, to get that hard stuff done.
I'm going to come to that a little bit later, but can I, let's go there now. You mentioned that the soft stuff brings the hard stuff. What do we mean by that?
So when you're, you know, statistics show that when people are happier at work, they perform better. When 40% of employees say when they constantly get affirmations from, or good job, great job, thanks for turning in that proposal on time, they will naturally want to do their job better. So when people are happier at work, it just naturally occurs that they're happy to spend more time there, work harder, and give more effort and be more engaged. And that only adds to, you know, profitability, getting the hard stuff done. I mean, wouldn't you rather be working on a project with people that you like? It's a fun atmosphere. You can be yourself. You can joke, but yet say, you know, I'm not getting this. I mean, you have a hard time. I'm having this difficulty with this client. Isn't it much more fun to be working with somebody and a team and a leader that gets you and helps understand you and work through those issues versus just having to be clammed up and just try to plug through the process? People don't last in those environments anymore. It's not sustainable.
Okay. So, and what I'm hearing is that kind of an open dialogue is really important.
Open dialogue, but just, I think, sincerely showing you care. I think, you know, I talked about relationships. So especially now in this virtual environment, you need to have a relationship with each one of your employees separate of what the team is, right? So you need to be able to sense that, gosh, Charlie, I noticed on the recent Zoom call, you seem to be pulling back from the team. Call them up and say, is something going on? Are you having challenges here at home? You know, being able to have those personal conversations, you've built the trust level, though. You can't have those conversations if you've not been able to build that trust level with that individual by spending time with them, by investing time with them, i.e. getting to know them. I mean, it's important as a leader to really do a lot of listening versus talking. It's about, you know, what's important in their life, what hobbies outside of work drive them inside of work, right? What's going on with their family? It's, you've got to be able to know your people as people first in order to empower them as people in the office.
And how does that connection work? So if we know them personally, I mean, I'm in agreement with you. But if we know them personally, what in your view, why does that drive the engagement or the hard stuff when we're looking at that?
When you know them personally, everybody wants to feel valued, right? Everybody wants to feel heard. And so when you have a relationship with somebody that you trust, that has your back, that's invested in you, that makes you feel valued, that approves of what you're doing, cares whether you do good or not. I mean, people just feel like they belong. They belong to something bigger than themselves. They matter. What they're doing matters. You know, just simply looking into people's eyes is a sign of validation. It's the first sign of validation of existence for us when we're born. I mean, it's the first thing we get from our parents to look into our eyes. And when you as a leader are communicating and you're looking into your employees' eyes and listening to what they have to say, being empathetic and hearing what they have to say, I mean, all those things play into them really trusting you and really feeling that you care about them as people. And when they feel that they can truly be themselves, voice their opinion, feel valued, they'll want to do their best work because they feel like the work they're doing is going to be valued and recognized by you sincerely. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's kind of interesting that we talk a lot about skills, and I'll tell you what I do kind of a little while, but we talk about a lot about skills and forget about the application of it, about how people actually get engaged with that. So what drives you? Why is this something that's obviously passionate for you, Kimberly?
Wow, that's a loaded question. And if you read, I think, the first chapter of my book, I tell my personal story. I'm not going to give it away here, but I'll share that, through some personal things that happened in my life, I was disconnected from my family at an early age, not physically, but emotionally. And that made such a huge impact on me as an individual, as a woman, as a person. And I fought to get that connection back with my family. Whether it's psychotherapy, a lot of self-help, reading, so that became such an important part to me. And knowing how disconnected I felt and depressed I felt, not a sense of community and how challenging that was, and alone. And I guess what instigated the book piece of it was that I feel with all this proliferation of technology, it's great. We're able to do this, right? You're in New York, I'm in California. Wonderful. It's beautiful. We could talk to anybody anywhere at any time, even on Zoom. Great. But I do feel, in an essence, we are committing digital suicide, because we all need the basics of human connection. We need to feel valued, whether it's in any relationship, whether it's at work by your leader, it's somebody, a significant other, or your kids. We all need to feel valued and worthy, right? And we all need to feel the energy and bonding of other people. And studies are shown, you just can't get that over a Zoom presentation. You can't get that over a text or an email. Why? Because digital technology removes the emotion out of the equation, and is emotion is what bonds us as people. We are emotionally geared. So, why does it happen when you send a text to somebody and you're having some kind of dialogue and text, you get these misrepresentations of what's being said, because we don't know the emotion behind it. We don't hear the tone of the voice. We don't hear the fluctuations of the voice. We don't see the tears in somebody's eyes or the smile on their face. We don't see that emotion. And so all that stuff became very prevalent to me. And just starting to kind of observe from afar how digital technology is hurting us in ways we're not thinking about as much as it's helping us.
Yeah. I mean, digital technology, obviously, we've kind of been forced down. We'll explore that a little bit more after the break. But we have been forced down that route, and people are doing what they can with right. what they've got at the moment. And I'm sure that will change. But I'm going to be interested after the break as well on your opinion of what will happen when I hate this phrase about turning, going back to normal. But what will happen when we've not got some of the restrictions that are going on? But we'll discuss that after the break. You're listening to The Mind Behind Leadership here on live on talkradio.nyc. My name is Graham Dobbin. We're speaking with Kimberly Lane, and we'll be right back after these.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m. So tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for the Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening. The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Mind Behind Leadership. We're speaking with Kimberly Lane. And just before the break, we were talking about kind of that digital connection, about how, you know, how maybe some things are lost. I wonder if when we talk about, you know, when we talk about text messages and emails, and then we talk about kind of this type of interaction. So if anybody's watching us on Facebook Live, we're here, you know, we're here using video. I wonder if there's a big difference there, and this has been a good halfway house for companies so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's especially now. I don't know what we would have done without this opportunity to be visually connected to, or be able to see each other visually, especially if you're meeting new people, having new conversations. It certainly helps accelerate the ability to connect. There is an article that came out in the Wall Street Journal. It's called The Science of Connection. It came out right about, I would say, April of last year, right after the pandemic. And what they did is they compared two groups. One group was a set of parents and their baby, and they would communicate to the child, the baby, in person in a new language over a couple months. And then the second group was parents with their baby, but they would communicate to the baby in a new language over Zoom. And it showed that the children or the babies that were listening to their parents talk to them in a new language over Zoom learned absolutely nothing versus the previous group that was in person learned the new language. And so I think a lot of it's because of that time delay. You're getting that time delay on voice, on eye contact, all that social body language is on a time delay. And so it's non sequitur with what you're actually hearing, seeing. And so I think subconsciously you're not able to get that bond or that trust or that connection. I need to do more research on that. But I thought that was an interesting article. So there's, you know, it's just kind of like when you walk into a room, you could feel the energy in that room, whether somebody was having a great conversation, whether they were laughing, whether they just had an argument. You know, you could hear a pin drop. You could feel the stress in the air, right? You're not going to get that other than by facial expressions, possibly, in a virtual situation, right? And I'm going to be curious to see salespeople are able to have a lot more sales calls on a daily basis, right? Because they'd have Zoom meetings back to back to back. But I'm going to be curious to see how many of those actually become closed deals in a year or 18 months or whatever it is. What's the percentage of closure rates? Because you're missing that bonding that happens in person with that energy exchange, right? That is just the chemistry, you know, it's a chemistry that you can't define and you can't put a description on it. You can't manufacture it. It's missing in this interaction, right? As much as we'd love to have it here. So we're doing the best we can. And this is a great tool. I think we need to be cognizant and conscious about when we choose to use digital interaction for our communication method or we choose human connection. And that has to be more of a conscious ask of ourselves, I think, moving forward.
It's interesting. We're going to have another guest I've got coming up is Stephen Holgate in March. And he is a very well-renowned sales leader. And one of the things that he's been working specifically with is some global accounts on how their sales teams connect like this, how they do it kind of at a distance. And it's really interesting that something that we maybe would have thought 12 months ago, that just won't happen. How people are adapting. I mean, I'm lucky enough in my job that I've been working in this week with teams in Bangalore, Sydney, San Francisco, Toronto, all over. And I'm never failed to amaze with kind of the ingenuity that comes up on how they connect, especially in sales. So what you lose sometimes on that personal connection, sometimes it's actually easier to get to someone.
Exactly.
Or we're invited into someone's home, which is all of a sudden now we've gotten that little bit of a different starting point to the relationship when we've got that personal part. And one of the things I'm always telling sales teams is, look, just be respectful. You're potentially in somebody's home and you don't know what's going on beside them. They might have Sammy next to them. You know, so I wonder if sometimes it actually gives us a lot of opportunities. I'm going to be curious that the relationships that have been built over the last year, how they continue outside. And I almost, this is a personal opinion, I almost feel that anything that's been built over the last year will be even stronger when we get together than it would have been if it was just kind of the traditional way.
I think because we're all going through this together, and there's not one person that is not experiencing this frustration of being isolated or disconnected or not able to leave the house or confined, or there's not one person that is not feeling this. So we're all in this together. So, you know, oh my gosh, I met you during, you know, the whole pandemic. I mean, it's going to be a bonding factor moving forward. And I feel we'll try to take the best of both worlds where, you know, this has made it a lot more accessible when, you know, people aren't commuting anywhere. They're not commuting to an office. They're not commuting to a sales meeting or another in-person meeting or a board meeting. They're at home. So they're more accessible for you to, and more probably looking for you to interrupt them by picking up the phone and calling them so they can have kind of a personal interaction. So I think that's a beautiful thing. People are more accessible. Graham, you also comment on it too. You're getting a vision into my world, right? In my home, my home office, you heard my dog, you know, or there's a kid running through, you know, you you can see there's a picture of the family on the back wall, or, you know, them, their first one hole in one, whatever. You get an image, you get a picture of people that you don't necessarily get right away when you first meet somebody in their office, right? So I agree with you. There are some other bonuses in this whole situation. So totally agree with you.
So we've talked about kind of what poor leadership is and the challenges. I know the challenges are coming out maybe that distance. So we kind of got into sales, but let's pop back into the leadership side of things. We know what needs to be done. What do you think the challenges are for leaders on making sure that they've got teams engaged and everything? So we know what kind of good looks like and what poor looks like. So what do we think the challenges are now?
Well, I think as a leader today, you know, there's so many other things you need to be paying attention to versus, you know, when we were meeting in offices and going to a corporate office or a headquarters or a main office, and, you know, things were kind of running smoothly as far as, you know, it's getting the project done or getting the sales quota or, you know, running the company. But now we've got so many more factors as leaders we need to be considering. We need to consider people's health and well-being. Are they going to feel safe when they come back to work? Are they feeling safe at home? You know, are we communicating properly? Are we communicating enough? You have to be conscious of how people are doing. Are they depressed? Are they feeling disconnected because of the whole isolation with the pandemic? I mean, it's almost like you've got to be a counselor. You've got to be really in tune with how you're feeling, because you're not always going to feel 100% going through whatever you're going through too. So you're trying to be a leader while you're also trying to move through this yourself. It's not been done before, right? So you have to be highly adaptable. You have to be able to read people pretty well. You have to be realistic about being vulnerable about what you can and can't do. And we're not going to always have all the answers. And I think we've got to be able to rely on our teams and be vulnerable enough to ask questions about what are some great ideas to get through this. We're running into a deadline. I'm not sure we're going to make it as a team. What's everybody's suggestion? I mean, we have to be able to, be more collaborative. There are times when I think we need to tell people what needs to be done from a hierarchical perspective, but I think there's a lot of times where we need to do a little bit more collaboration. I always talk about trying to be a coach as a leader. I don't know if any of you had those parents where when you weren't doing something right, they certainly took over and told you how to do it, right?
And how that Scottish. Make you feel. I'm Scottish. Yeah. It tended to be fairly direct.
Right. I'm German. So like, it was like, you're not doing this right. And stop. And so how does that make you feel? Makes you feel horrible. And so as a leader, if you can say, hey, let me help you. What do you think the next step is? Why do you think that's going to work? Or let them do it. Why do you think that didn't work? Or what do you think you could have done differently? Or how do you think the meeting went? Or what do you think of the response of the client? Did you think they liked it? What can you do better? It's helping them come up with the answers. And so it's not like you attacking them and them getting on the defensive, because none of us want to be on the defensive. None of us want to feel bad about ourselves. And it's our role as a leader. Of course, my neighbor's getting on his motorcycle. It's our job as a leader, especially in these times, because there's so much going on in families and, homeschooling and health issues, that we need to help make our people feel good as much as possible, right? And whether that's affirming something they're doing right, and it doesn't have to necessarily mean finishing the project, but something they've done great that day. I mean, people want to be valued. And then also coaching them along is just really, really important. It helps make you feel better as a leader too.
Yeah, interesting. Coaching is probably the one thing that's coming up more often than not. And it feels like, for an old person like me, it feels like younger leaders coming through, it's almost a natural thing for them to do, is to coach. It feels like, education's maybe even changed over the last few centuries since I went to school. This is natural that we get people to think about their own ideas. We're going to go for a break in a moment, but after that, I can't let you away. You've mentioned the word vulnerability twice, so we're going to explore that a little bit. Because that always seems to kind of come up with good leaders are vulnerable, and kind of what is vulnerability, I suppose, is one. And secondly, what's the boundary? How do we manage to set boundaries for that? Because I'm sure a lot of that's changed. And we'll dig in a little bit more about coaching, and I want to know more about your book. So we've got a lot to talk about. You're listening to The Mind Behind Leadership live on talkradio.nyc. We're speaking with Kimberly Lane this evening, and we've got some messages, and we'll be straight back.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy Gee, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business, or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to The Mind Behind Leadership. We're talking vulnerable leadership. You used that word, Kimberly, you used it twice. Being a vulnerable leader. What does that mean to you? Or having vulnerability?
I guess the simplest form is to be human. You know, we're not, I think sometimes we feel as leaders we have to have it all together and almost be perfect. I'm not saying you want to air your dirty laundry. That's not necessarily the case, but to show that you're human, that you want to struggle. So it'd be, you know, say there's a new hire and they're struggling with trying to learn the material and to get on board with the team. And you're like, you know, I was once there and my new role as XYZ, it took me almost 8 months before I finally got enough under my belt that I could actually stand up and give a presentation. You're going to get this. So just kind of, you know, there's a lot of empathy in there too, but I think you talked about boundary. You don't want to be airing your dirty laundry and nobody wants to know their leader can't get the job done, right? Or is incompetent or is mentally unstable, right? You've got to be, there's a balance in that, right? God forbid,
It's probably right. Not a good idea.
Correct. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I remember coaching a CEO and he was just very hard on his people, very tough upper lip, easy to criticize, easy to judge. And, you know, his employees did not want to be called into his office because they always felt it was going to be a negative critique and not go well. Right. And then, unfortunately, his father passed away. And I, you know, kind of asked him, what were some of his memories of his father? And he had a couple good ones, but there was one that really stuck out to him that he just always felt like he was never going to be good enough because, and I'm sure many of us have this in our life where his dad always critiqued him, nothing was ever done right. He was always being corrected. He was always, you know, that, and so he had basically become his father in his executive role. And when I kind of mirrored that to him, he kind of had a ha ha moment and he was like, wow, I need to change because that's not how I want to be perceived by my people. I know because I'm on the receiving end as a kid. Now I'm delivering it to my people, right? So when he kind of acknowledged that now moving forward with his employees, almost to the point of apologizing, you know, I'm sorry, you know, that's the way I was treated. That's the way I thought it was supposed to be done, but I know what it feels like. And, you know, can we start on a different path? Can we try something new, right? So I think though, being honest about mistakes, I mean, we're only human, right? And I think your employees respect that. And it shows a good example that we're not perfect. And if you're not making mistakes, then you're not trying, right? So as leaders, your goal is to be trying new things and to step out there. So,
yeah, it's interesting because with the workforce becoming younger, also with a younger workforce at the moment, they're kind of motivated in different ways. And I remember when I kind of first left school that you got a job and you were almost looking for that job to be the one that took you all the way through. Whereas now, you know, people are quite happy to look at 18 months, 2 years, experience something, take breaks, all that. How does that change how we approach? I'm just kind of listening to you about being vulnerable, being honest, being open, coaching as a leader. It feels like that fits right in with that type of workforce that we might have.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, I do a talk, it's called The Isolation Epidemic. Is your business ready for its impact on employee engagement and customer retention? Because the millennials will be 75% of the workforce by 2025. They're already 50% now. And as you're talking about these younger generations coming in, they are demanding a different style of leadership. They don't want to be told what to do. They prefer to be working in teams and more collaborative, and they want transparency. And so us standing up there acting like we know everything and we're perfect and, you know, tell them what to do is just not going to fly. It's not going to be receptive. And they've got more options these days, as you mentioned, to, after 18 months, change and go to another career, right? That, you know, it's so they're not going to be loyal like your father and my father were. And, you know, we were here for four or five companies possibly, right? So it's a whole different mindset. And, you know, with the newer generations coming forward, it's, I don't know if they're, I don't want to say they're not thankful for having a career, but they're not as dedicated and loyal like I think we were in our fathers before that because of the options available. And I forget the statistic. I just heard this the other day, but it's not unlikely that these individuals may have a main job, but have some other gig jobs on the side. Right. So from a legal perspective, I don't know if we're going to contract that one. I mean, because normally you can only work for one company. So that'll be an interesting thing, but they just, they're more wanting to do what they want to do, how they want to do it. And if they're not feeling good about it and it's not feeling valued about it, and they're not feeling like they're making an impact in the world, they're quick to move to something else.
Mm.
So that coaching piece comes important because you've got to have a good relationship with them to understand and help coach them to where they want to go from here to here. And hopefully that coaching is you want them here to here in your organization, right?
So you know, we're looking at lots of different types of leadership and also the types of teams that they run. And there's also that conflict where we're saying that kind of the younger workforce like to work in teams, but the gig economy is huge.
Right.
And there's kind of that balance again. Who do you like working with?
Who do I like working with? I love working with leaders I love working with leaders who want to make a difference and want to make an impact and realize their biggest gift is empowering their people and realize that there are some probably roadblocks in the way they're practicing that right now that I can help them with to make their role more fulfilling for themselves and also more fulfilling for the employees. And, you know, I talk about in my Isolation Epidemic talk and even in my book about, you know, the millennials seek community on Facebook, on social media. And I'd probably bet 99.9% of those people that were community on Facebook or social media, they've never met in person. Versus our traditional forms of community in my growing up were block parties or the community center, or it was church, right? And all that's even been removed now with the pandemic, we're all at home. So my philosophy is if we can make the workplace through leadership, a culture of community that gives people the community sense that is missing in all those other deficits because they're not block parties, they're not community centers, there's not, you know, hope to God they've got a good group of family home, family network, but you know, there's not much as organized religion anymore, and it's not a political statement or any means, but just, you know, where we can go from a source of community, right? And I'd like to see that the workplace becomes the new community place, feeding so much of what we need from a human connection perspective, from a soul perspective, from a satisfaction at work perspective, and i.e. that results in profitability, because studies continue to show people perform better when they're happy at work. and everything else rolls behind it.
I've got another question that just keeps on jumping out, and I don't know if either of us can answer it. But I'm wondering if the community that's brought is through Facebook, through social media, say.
Right.
That's where people find it. So that's right. Kind of natural. So why would they need it elsewhere? Why would they need it at work? Or why would they need it at church? Or why would they need it somewhere else? When this is kind of the environment that they're brought up in, because we were brought up in an environment where, yeah, you got it at school. You got it as, you know, playing sports. You got it, you know, the scouts or the guides or whatever it is, whatever kind of interaction, that's how you got it. And I'm wondering if our generation are maybe putting things that we think should be happening on other generations. Just, I don't know, I'm just throwing that out.
It's a great concept. It's almost like if you've never had chocolate ice cream, you're always going to like vanilla, right?
I don't like chocolate ice cream. That's a bad example.
All right. What's your favorite flavor?
Vanilla.
Awesome, right? So if you're, I guess, so that I can't, do you have a second favorite?
That just shows you how boring I am.
So let me do a different example. It's kind of like they've always had social media. They've always communicated, interacted on social media, right? So they don't know what the feeling of being bonded to people in a human connected setting or experience that in a set of sequential events that makes a difference to understand the difference. So that's number one. Number two, statistics show those that are the highest users of Facebook is a direct correlation to the highest incidence of isolation. There's an isolation epidemic going on that started well before the pandemic. It started about 10 years ago. And another reason I write the book, my chapter, I think it's chapter 3 on the power of digital technology. Prior to 1999, the incidence, according to CDC, of suicide was going down. From 1999 to 2014, the incidence of suicide has gone up 30% and is now at an all-time high. Coincidentally, that was the time the internet got developed and smartphones became proliferated. Also, now they've done this isolation epidemic study, and they're saying now with the pandemic, with this, you know, being at home, the numbers are now not 56% of Americans are feeling isolated alone. It's more like 76% of Americans are feeling isolated and alone and disconnected on a regular basis. And so my kind of going back to your question is they are seeking community on Facebook or on social media, but I don't believe it's fulfilling the need. Hence why we have suicide, why we have disconnection, why we have, you know, depression, why we have feelings of isolation. And so I feel if we can bring that human connection back in a community of what work can provide to not replace, but to offset and balance out, that maybe I would like to see they spend less on this and more here.
It's a good point. I use certain forms of social media to keep in contact with people across the world. And everybody tells me, wow, you're having such a ball in New York. But I only post the good stuff.
Right.
People only see what I want them to see. They don't see the boring stuff, and they don't see what you kind of have to put up with and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's interesting how we get a perspective on someone else's world. And I do wonder, and it's bothered me at times that people think that I live a privileged life because I'm in New York and I see all these things because I'm only posting the good stuff. And, you know, I'm kind of really careful about what I post. So it's not supposed to be making other people even envious about what you're doing, because that's just not it. We're just in different places, nothing else. And look, we're going for a final break. This is flying in, Kimberly. After the break, we will talk about your book. We didn't get to it the last time. And we will talk about your book and probably just have a quick look at, you know, thinking back about your career, what you would do differently, what you would change maybe even to do earlier that you would
love. That I wish I had done earlier?
Yeah. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that after the break. But we'll have a look at that and have a look at your book. You're listening to The Mind Behind Leadership. We're live on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
The new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to The Mind Behind Leadership. We are speaking with Kimberly Lane. Kimberly, I caught you dancing to the theme tune. It gets everybody.
It's catchy. I like it. That's a good energy to it. Really upbeat. To be my alarm clock music.
Tell us about the book. I know you've talked briefly about kind of the beginning part of the book, but what was the inspiration? What pulled kind of the stories for your earlier life and the workplace and everything? What pulled all that together?
Yeah, that's a great question. I always thought that I was going to write. I always wanted to write a book about my life and my ups and downs, and having gone through what I've gone through, like so many women have, and coming out on the other side and empowered and really. Not to tell my story, but to show how you can recover and you too can go on and follow your dreams, that kind of thing. But I didn't want the book to be all about me. And so I just started, I just started getting really upset about just seeing the millennials and the teenagers around me so focused on their phone and not relating and not connecting. And then the whole suicide issue just really bothered me. And having had just not very good leaders in the past. And I thought, a leader's role is the single most determinant of whether a person stays or whether they go. It's 70 to 80% of the factor of why they leave, they stay or they go, is the leader. So why not make sure the leaders are the best, right? And have the best relationship with the people. So it was kind of the combination of my wanting to tell my personal story, seeing gaps in leadership from my own experience and working for Fortune 100 companies and seeing the leadership that was out there. And then third, just seeing this whole, what I call digital suicide. I kind of chuckle about the entire pandemic because all along we were choosing to remove human touch points. We were choosing to do self-check-in, self-checkout, ship everything to the house, even get your Peloton and work out from home. Even the groomer comes by for the dog. We were driving in that direction. We were choosing for convenience to remove human touch points. And then now when the pandemic hit and we're told we don't have a choice but to stay home, now we're upset when we were doing that all along. So because now we're fighting for our need to socialize, our need to have community, our need to be connected to others. You know, I mean, who thought it would be such a luxury to go to a bar and have a beer with somebody and a glass of wine and chit chat? I mean, wow, who would have thought that, you know? Or it's just so funny that we're really craving that simple point of connection and freedom of being with other people. And think about when 9/11 hit, obviously you're right there in New York. How do we solve pain? How do we solve a common, you know, eclectic feeling of horrible pain? We come together. We have candlelight vigils. We go to church. We have people over. We bond. We cry. We hug. We read poems. We recite prayers. Whatever. But we're coming together in community, and that has probably been the biggest defeatist part of this whole pandemic. Is when we're trying to heal, we can't because we can't come together. Right. So I kind of went off on a tangent there, but
it's an interesting point. It's actually a really interesting point. So in times of crisis, we pull together.
The very thing we need to heal, we're getting denied. And so I just really, you know, everything I accomplished in business was because I cared about the people I was working with. I cared about my clients, and people would routinely tell me, Kimberly, we just always trusted you. I'm like, well, you could. I mean, that's who I am. I just, what I say is what I mean. And I don't have a mean bone in my body. My intent is nothing but genuine and kindness. And I really care about my clients. I really do. And I don't know that everybody does. But, you know, I think because I had these relationships, once I had the relationship with people, I could sell them anything as long as they needed it, right? Because they trusted me. And I just think the world works so much easier when we're connected to other people and we work together collaboratively and getting a project done and building that fence between you and your neighbor. Much easier if you guys work on it together, right? Than you out there in the morning and he's out there at night, right? It's just so much, life is so much more enjoyable when we do it together, and working is no different, especially when we spend so much of our time there. So that's kind of, you know, I know a lot of it's rolled into one. I mean, another instigator is I talk about before I was let go from my corporate job and started my, got into the consulting piece of it, I also had a bakery. It was called Live Life Lusciously. And I would make Italian mascarpone cheesecakes after my grandmother's great Italian mascarpone cheesecake recipe. But I would vary it. I would put like Bailey's in there, make it tequila lime, and so I was trying to sell those, right? And I had them in three different restaurants here in town. But it was because the reason why I did that, there's so much power of connection over food. I mean, our ancestors would break bread together. I mean, they would hunt, you know, they would hunt, kill the meat, come back and sit over a fire and talk politics, eating the beef, right? I mean, it's just, we're just used to dining together, sharing food together. I mean, that's such a great way to get to know people and to bond and create a shared experience, because you've got the taste, you've got the smell, you've got the atmosphere, you've got the energy exchange. I mean, so I'm just really big foodie and wine, and that I just think there's so much goes on when you dine with people and have an enjoyable shared experience that is so powerful in connecting people on so many levels. So
it's one of the things I've missed in the last year. I run networking events and bring together community events, and it's always kind of in a restaurant or you know, in a breakfast place. But I was part of like an Italian-American network here. And we met in Italian restaurants every month. There'd be 50, 60, 70 of us, no agenda, nothing, got together. And they were and among some of the best relationships I built really, really quickly.
Exactly.
And we think about some of the community events are almost a little bit forced or have agendas there. And yes, I would go along to those, but this one, as soon as the date was out, I was booked. I was straight on it, and really nothing else was going to get in the way of doing that. You're right. The breaking the bread. And I'm with you. I don't have a nasty bone or in my body unless somebody deserves it. So that's my get out. That's always my get out. We've kind of only got a couple of minutes to go. I said before we went into the last break. Is there anything you wish you'd known sooner in your career? kind of a message that you maybe want younger workforce to know now that might have made that big difference?
The biggest thing that I think I did, and I know we have much time, but the biggest thing I did was face my fear. I didn't mm-hmm. want fear to stop me from not doing something in my life. So for a quick example, I was hard to believe. I know, extremely shy, quite nerdy growing up in high school and when I was younger. And best thing I did was went away to college and left home. Best thing I did, because I said to myself, Kimberly, you're going to become more social. Even if your grades fall, and you're going to learn how to socialize and connect with people. And, and I did that. My grades didn't fall, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me is setting a challenge for myself. It was kind of like, I'm tired of living this way. I'm tired of feeling shy or uncomfortable here. I'm going to get good at this. I'm going to walk through my fear, get to the other side. So my best suggestion would be, if you have a fear, face it. And there will be such a level of exhilaration and joy for you to get to that other side. And I think sometimes that fear is definitely there for you to pursue it, because it means you're getting closer to your dream of what really you're supposed to be doing on this earth.
What a fantastic way to end the show. Thank you, Kimberly. What's going to happen? Step up and do it. We've got Kimberly Lane. Thank you very much for being a guest this evening. Thank you very much to Sam Leibovitz for being a fantastic producer. Join us next week again at 7 p.m. live on talkradio.nyc for The Mind Behind Leadership. Good night.
Good night, Graham. Thanks.
Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening. The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7.
Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.